Do you still know and wait for me for 100 years? They whisper sweetly and gently, love, my dear, will never pass away, not even in 400 years. I would gladly follow them, but what will become of the castle then, if it stands here without its master? God is its master? I gladly give it to him. I go, because the time has come. 122 later, my intimate child. I come to you easily, like the breeze. I must thank you for your prayer, your help and your love. You saw my dear castle illuminated just now, you saw us floating in a ray of spiritual light. Today is my joyous feast. Since I wrote to you, I have been completely transformed. With all my love, I surrounded my dear wife, and together we went to a great star, to one of the dwellings of the Lord. What did my eyes see? A beautiful angel surrounded by light led us, oh my child, where do you think? To a beautiful castle, to the beautiful age of knighthood, wild and beautiful, like my beautiful age. Here I saw my parents. Here you must become a child again, said the angel gently and kindly, a good, brave and valiant knight who fights for God. I have come once more to my old castle to bid farewell to you, for I shall never see you again. God bless you, beautiful child. Thank you 1,000 times, do not forget and pray for me, for old Tattenbuck. Catherine, finally, I want to cast one more glance at the earth from this sphere. I see a glorious figure surrounded by light and radiance, a spirit, the figure of an immortal being who has reached the stage of perfection, swinging about the earth, distributing light, love and power. People call such a being an angel. The angel has a wreath in his hand, he holds it high above the atmosphere of the earth, and flowers fall from the wreath. The flowers are symbols of virtues, their petals are their qualities. The angel distributed half of the wreath among men on earth. Here the flower of love fell, there that of patience and self-denial, or the heavenly thorn of suffering. Every flower that fell, every leaf must grow, so that it may be united again with the angel's heavenly wreath, as the glory, the halo of every noble spirit. Without thorns there is no rose, without trials and suffering there is no virtue, no victory. Many men suffer as a result of their sins, but it is much better to suffer for virtue. O man, do not fear the thorns that fall from the eternally beautiful wreath. Receive them in peace for the flowers and leaves that are the eternal gifts of God. If a rose has come to you, let it bloom fresh and beautifully. If a thorn has fallen, be peaceful and do not be discouraged. If you have received a forget-me-not consisting of 5 small leaves, which says to you, do not forget your Creator, then remember the fidelity to the faith, and keep it with 5-fold fidelity, and you will receive a 5-fold reward from the immortal flower of heaven. If you have received a lily, then be steadfast in the struggle, remain pure and good, and look up to your God with childlike love. Let your flower ripen into a noble deed, simple and great. The violet tells you that the small and weak will become strong with united strength, and that humility will one day become evident as the highest virtue. Thus do the flowers and leaves of the angel's wreath speak from heaven to the earth, and in this sphere everything that is good and noble must unite in sweet harmony. He who loses his flower in the dust and dirt comes through empty-handed, and cannot unite with pure and noble feelings, but those who have faithfully preserved their flowers, joy and happiness are their lot. Care for your flowers and nurture the divine seed within you, love the roses and the thorns. Let them sprout and grow with the qualities of each flower, and then you will be united with the eternal wreath of perfection. Chapter 18 Fourth Atmospheric Ring Second Sphere. Magnetism, Spiritual Gifts, Mediums. Acts on the Sun's Digduke, causes sleep. Under the influence of the Moon and Leo, brings the North Wind. Catherine, this sphere is, so to speak, the temple of the Fourth Atmospheric Ring. All the spirits of this sphere gather here to be present at the teachings and visions of the clairvoyant spirits. Here we are taught about God's being and about things completely unknown to us, about other worlds and days. Through the spirits of this sphere, who are called to this sphere, God sends us his love, his command, His word, through these same spirits we are constantly informed about the fate of our loved ones on earth, because their visionary gaze penetrates through all spheres. They warn us when our loved ones are in danger and offer us a way and the means for help. These spirits as mediums form the bond that connects us with Earth. They bring their mediumistic abilities to Earth to train mediums and clairvoyants. They work in spiritual revelations and the spiritualist movement on Earth, and are imbued with the best, most powerful, most pure magnetism. They are true priests and intermediaries between God, spirit, and men. The fluids of these spirits have a beneficial effect on the nerve centers of people and bring beneficial sleep to the tired and sick. In this sphere I met the spirit of a dear friend of mine, who left Earth 40 years before me. I asked him to tell me about his experiences in the spirit world. First of all, I want to outline his death. Let us enter the mourning house. The father died in the prime of his life. His young widow and six children stand around the coffin and all are weeping. The youngest child, in the arms of the nurse, looks at his dead father with big eyes and does not know what has happened. The others cry and sob so that the heart almost bursts, and the widow cries out, "O God, why have you taken my dear husband and the good father of these little children so early? He who was our only support, who was so good and true. How forsaken we are." One's mind stops in the midst of such blows of fate and can only complain in the pain of the heart. 40 years have passed since then, and the children have become mature men and women. Erno, the spirit, said the following, "I am pleased to tell you, my dear friend, what happened to me after death. Although almost half a century has passed since I died on earth, I still remember the day of my death vividly, because it was extremely difficult for me to leave my beloved wife and children. Due to a long, painful illness, I was waiting and preparing for death. Like a good soldier, I looked him in the eye bravely. Like a Christian, I prepared for death and entrusted everything to my God. Of course, the hope that God might preserve my life for my loved ones did not completely die out in me. But when the death throes occurred, I knew that everything was over. I said goodbye to my loved ones, thanked my wife for her love and care, blessed my children, and asked that they would be held together like links in a chain with love. By this time my spirit had been lifted from physical suffering, and the merciful love of God came to me in the form of my sister Henriette, who helped me in the fight of the last battle. She took me up and carried me to the realm of peace. How long I remained there under her careful and loving care I do not know. When I regained full consciousness, I saw Henriette before me as a radiant angel, who, smiling kindly, said to me, 'You are freed from the earth.' 'Yes, I am dead,' I answered, 'and yet I live. How are my wife and children?' 'I thought first of them in the afterlife.' 'Trust in God. Trust and believe,' said Henriette. I was calm. I was like a weary wanderer who nurses himself. And I listened with rapture to the sweet song of the spirits. But then a terrible longing seized me for my beloved wife and children. 'Brother,' I said, 'it is right that I rest here alone, listening to the angels' song, doing nothing, and my people on earth are perhaps doing very badly. They are crying and wailing after me. I usually wonder at myself and my peace. Where has my strength gone? I want to see my loved ones, lead them to them.' 'Not yet,' said Henriette. 'You are still very weak and would not understand. Wait for the time when you will feel completely at home in the spiritual world. Pray, pray and study.' Her words were completely incomprehensible to me. My impatience and longing grew gradually. I was of a very violent nature, therefore, staying in a place of rest became unbearable. I wanted to go to earth. Then I saw a gray figure not far away, who beckoned to me. I went over. 'Come,' said the gray man. 'Do you want to go to earth? I will lead you.' We went. How shall I describe it? We had been going through layers of air, like on some great highway. Many figures came and went on this road. Some floated up from the earth in joy, others were carried by figures of light, and some were trudging up with great fatigue. A little black man said to me, I have been going for 100 years, and I cannot find the way. Those who have gone to earth have either been figures of light, or child souls, or fugitives like me. Which country do you want to go to? My guide asks. To Austria, I replied. We had reached solid ground. During our journey, I noticed that my figure had become thicker. I slowly took on my former human form, and when we reached Earth, I looked as I did before my last major illness. It is a natural law, my companion explained. We attract the fluids of the Earth to ourselves, which clothe us in our former form. I stood beside my wife and children. The agony of standing there and not being able to make myself visible was very painful. I could not tell her how I loved her. The children were not. I could tell you the good news. Everything turned out badly, quite differently than I wanted. Then I went to my grave, and there I wept bitterly. God, I begged you to take me, because I can no longer help you here. You called me. I have nothing more to do on earth. What I am now telling you so briefly took 3 years. For that long I stayed on earth and tried to influence people, to direct them in a better direction, but all in vain. I fell on deaf ears. No one heard me, except God heard my words and sent my sister Henriette again, to bring me from earth. You see, said my sister, your impatience was of little use. You must learn how to speak to people so that they will feel it. You were very intense. Learn to be patient and to believe. By fervent prayer you can do more for your own than if you were among them. God has called you, entrust them to God. Then followed a happy period. I visited the spiritual spheres in which Christ, the Redeemer, teaches. I listened to his teachings. I learned from John, Paul, and many high spirits, and they gave me wise guides whom I gladly obeyed. 127. This led me to the abodes of the blessed, to the reformatory institutions for the lost. Yes, I visited even the places of greatest sorrow, where spirits dwell who do not know God. Here I could act as a comforter. In my spiritual life, from the first day until now, a voice has always rung out from earth to me, the voice of my eldest daughter, who prayed for me every day and never forgot it. This pleased me. I always learned from my guide about the fate of my children. A trust in God Eros took root in me. It was not my task to guide them, for God had called me. Even if the fate of my children on earth seemed so sad, I said to myself, my children are God's children. They must struggle alone. God be merciful to them. I have often thought about this and found it strange that it was not my task to guide any of the children. My daughter became a medium, which I was very happy about. Her mediumship made me happy, and looking at her became a blessing. My task will be to bring each of my children from earth, to help each of them in death, to guide them to their spiritual abode. With some of them, a very difficult task awaits me. Caitlin, Erno had barely finished his story when I saw one of my acquaintances again, a great philosopher on earth, a follower of Plato, and a great admirer of the Greeks. Greek mythology has always been a mystery to me. One cannot read Greek poets without admiration and emotion. I turned to this spirit and asked him to enlighten me about mythology. The Greeks cried out to the gods, and they heard them. Yes, the gods appeared to people and declared their will through the oracle. The Greeks lived, so to speak, with their gods, whose power, grace, and wrath they often experienced. So were these gods, spirits. And if they once were, they must still exist today. This spirit of the ancient Greeks answered, men are fallen, incarnate spirits, whose understanding is darkened by some fall or transgression. Reason is no longer free. They are pure spirits of God. Every earth-born spirit is a spirit departed from God, who has something to do on earth, yet men always strive towards the forsaken God. And since, as a result of the fall, the image of God has become obscured before them, which the Egyptians so cleverly represented in the veiled Isis, they have sought the divinity in all its forms and essences in the spiritual world. The gods of the Greeks are indeed living, active spirits even today, types and groups of the spirits of nature and the universe. the ruling, moving forces of those who know and obey the one great God. If you were to appeal to the guiding spirit of the waters today, it would be like turning to the Neptune of the Greeks. Call upon those spirits who were commanded to govern the fertility of the earth, and Ceres stands before you. Call upon those who watch over lovers, and Aphrodite, Psyche, and Cupid are before you. In all myths lies a deep spiritual foundation of truth. Everything that lives, moves, and is moved is guided by special kinds or categories of spirits. In all movements lies the intelligence of immortal forces who obey the Creator. Thus there are special spirits who guide the dead to their new homeland, Charon, spirits who guide the reincarnation, spirits of marriage, spirits who bring healing fluids to the sick, spirits of battles, revenge, and peace. The evil spirits of the underworld, the good spirits of Olympus or the upper worlds. If a spiritualist or medium were to make it his business to study the types of spirits, he would soon discover all the gods of the ancient peoples and the essence of their folk tales. The medium and the seer were much more common among these peoples than among modern people, because the gates of the spirit world were open to them through the so-called, as a result of close communication with their gods. The old magicians and the modern occultists and fakirs know the qualities of all types of spirits, and as a result of their control over spiritual forces, they create things that the ignorant call miracles. Nothing is without a soul. Everything has spiritual life, immortality. Christ brought down the faith in the one great God in its purity, for which the first Christians sacrificed their lives. But Christianity did not remain in its original purity and simplicity, which constituted its greatness. Chapter 19 Fourth Atmospheric Ring Third Sphere. It contains the teachers and disciples. It brings peace. It affects the organs of the heart. Under the influence of Jupiter and Cancer. East Wind. Catiline, in this sphere I have found several old acquaintances who have made statements through the medium that we are communicating here. There are spirits here who serve God in word and deed. The spirits of this sphere bring peace to earth, fight against war and strife, and affect the hearts of men. Disciple, I would like to use my stay in this sphere to ask a question of one of the teachers here. Please, dear Catiline, let me know if this is possible. Catiline, certainly, dear disciple. I will put you in touch with a spirit named Beda, who will answer your question through the medium. Question, can atheism be refuted on scientific grounds? Answer, atheism is disputed without any scientific basis, it is not based on any positive, scientific basis, so we can only consider it as a statement or philosophy, which logic has already refuted a million times and will be scientifically refuted by the increasing spiritual revelations. Question, is there a priori evidence against atheism? Answer, a priori evidence is the existence of spirits, which is confirmed and proven by the study of spiritualism. These evidences multiply in the course of the development of spiritualism and are established in such a way that they become incontrovertible. Question, what evidence clearly speaks in favor of the existence of God? Answer, such evidence, in the strict sense of the word, namely, positive evidence of the existence of the person of God on earth, is almost impossible. You have enough evidence for the existence of spirits and their immortality and their infallible divine laws, from which you can conclude that there is a God. Question, if there is no strictly scientific evidence at all, on what can faith be justified? Answer, logic, reason, conclusions. Question, on what should faith be based? Answer, on its own strength. Question, how can the statement that man's five senses make known what exists be refuted? Answer, man's five senses are the organs of the body, the keys of the piano, which you call the body. With these you can only know what you hear, see and feel materially. However, spiritual sight, hearing, and feeling are only given to man by the spirit, this engine of the organism, and through it you come to know what is as such. The spirit plays the piano well if it is well tuned, but poorly if it is incorrectly or falsely tuned. Question, how can the teleological, target-based view of nature be understood, and how can the mechanical one be refuted? Answer: everything has its purpose, therefore the teleology is correct. Everything was created and governed by the highest intelligence, which is infinite, since man is neither able to understand nor comprehend this highest intelligence. He invents doctrines and creation stories. Question: how was Quinet's study of nature able to enjoy increasing respect before the human mind? Answer: because without knowing it, unconsciously in man he found the spirit, the immortal image, the image of God. He believed that man only materially admired and glorified the work of nature, whereas fundamentally he always glorified the spirit, God, in man and nature. Question: is creation an act of God's will, or if not, how can God be subordinated to any law? Answer: God and the law are one. God and creation are one. God and life are one. God can never be separated from the law, creation and life. Question: is the assumption of an immutable law not naturalism, not atheism? Answer: not to a rational thinker, since God and the law are one and since it is precisely the laws that testify to God. Without God, there would be absolutely nothing, everything would be chaos. The highest intelligence has laws, the magnitude and scope of which man with his animalistic organization can never comprehend. Question: how can the supernatural be proven? Answer: the study of spiritualism, magnetism, the spiritual revelations of the past, finally through good, reliable mediums. Question: how can the struggle of all against all be reconciled? How can the sufferings of the world be reconciled with the goodness of God? Answer: by the law of increase and the repulsion of opposites, that is, by the law of peace. With the war leading to harmony. The goodness of God lies precisely in the fact that he allows evil, the opposition that arose as a result of the fall of spirits, to be purified in the struggle and leads it to happiness through suffering. The goodness of God is that there is no destruction. Question: do the sins of men prove that God did not know them, or that he did not want to create them better? Answer: the sins of men prove the disobedience and fall of spirits. God created only pure spirits, capable of reaching perfection and endowed with free will. The spirits themselves have fallen, but God's love makes them pure again. Question: are mathematical truths imposed on God, or are they determined by God? Answer: mathematical truths, as such, constitute the image of God. There is no truth without God. God himself is the greatest, most positive mathematical truth, the one, the beginning, from which all other numbers come. Question: do the same laws, forces, and materials prevail throughout the world? Answer: yes, they do. They have the same laws, forces, and materials everywhere, because everything comes from the same beginning, God. Question: does the eternity of the world exclude its creation by God and the existence of God? Answer: without God there is no eternity, no creation. Eternity presupposes the existence of an eternally active, never-resting mind, which is God, the Creator. Question: if the world is eternal, how could the temporal have originated? Answer: in the eternity of the world, in the being of creation, in the eternities of the existence of the worlds, the temporal had to arise, change, and be transformed. The principle of harmonizing the worlds demands this. Question: then not only every tiny thing that exists, but also every individual must exist and act forever? Answer: that is correct. Question: how can the eternity of the world be reconciled with the purpose of the world? Answer: the purpose of the world, harmony, life in eternity. Question: if nothing is destroyed, only the form changes, where does the form and its change come from? Answer: form is the consequence of the fall of spirit and the condensation of all fluids and matter. The change of form is necessary for the improvement of spirits and the rarefaction of all matter and fluid. That which passes away is constantly arising and changing, but only apparently passes away. In reality it only changes and transforms. Question: if the world is infinite in space and time, is a finite number of worlds and individuals possible? Answer. God alone knows his realm, the number of worlds and individuals, space. No one except God can comprehend it. Question. How can tiny things exist if the divisibility of matter is infinite? Answer. The very divisibility of matter proves that it consists of tiny particles, which have grouped and come together, and then the matter itself is broken up and dissolved. Question. How is the divisibility of matter compatible with materialism, and the eternity of tiny particles and monads with naturalistic monism? Answer. Tiny particles and monads must arise from eternal creation as products of the vital force, which then gather and group into larger forms and creatures, only to separate and spiritualize again and become embryonic spirits in the primal world. This is a twofold movement or formation, a circular movement downwards and an upward one. Question. Does light fill the whole world? Answer. Light is more or less everywhere. There is no absolute darkness. Everywhere there is light and air. Without these two there is no life. Question. Is the ether air? Answer. The ether is the composition, the airflow of the light of the suns and planets. Question. Is cold a transformed heat, or the absence of all heat? Answer. Cold is transformed heat, just as darkness is transformed light and evil is transformed good. Question. Is there life in the great universe? Answer. Yes, and in a high power, because everything that is on the earth is also in the universe as a high power. From the degraded comes the amplified, from matter comes the force. Question. Did the earth receive organic germs from outside? Answer. What the earth brought as a germ came from within, but it receives the initiation and the ability to germinate from outside. The elements of the power that give light awaken the receptive germ elements and make them viable. Every world has a special atmospheric ring around it, in which the elements move, 134 which fertilize the germs. Question. Can organic germs be carried from one world to another? Answer. Organic germs can only be carried from one star to another if they are transformed. Transformed. For example, a flower from Venus could never be brought to Earth as such. It would first have to be transformed. Its parts would first have to be dissolved, and then put back together again according to the conditions of the Earth. Question. Housing. Are the people on Jupiter? Answer. Jupiter is inhabited by more perfect and better people. Question. Did man originate from animals? Answer. The origin of man is described in spirit, force, matter. Man did not originate from animals. He was essentially created as man, just as animals originated from the animal kingdom, plants from the vegetable kingdom, and minerals from the mineral kingdom. Question. Do these countries have a spiritual world? Answer. Yes. Because the life force animates and shapes them? Question. Did Plato want to teach monadology? Answer. Plato tried to teach the doctrine of the soul, the immortal spirit. He was very close to the truth, but he could not express it properly, because his Greekness prevented him from doing so. His innermost spirit conceived God as the soul creator, and nature as creation. Question. How is it that philosophers consider pantheism to be more sublime than theism? Answer. One doctrine is just as wrong as the other. The spirits got into a fight with each other as a result of the fall, which gave rise to all sorts of philosophies. Question. Can prayer change the will of God? Answer. No. Man thinks very little of the will of God, often wanting to control his own destiny, and he begs God for things that are not in God's will. The divine will is the wisest and most just, and man should trust in it. Prayer has a helping and healing power, and it attracts these powers. Question. To what extent is the spirit capable of ennobling nature? Answer. Deeper than you think, the spirit awakens, vitalizes. Question. Do the higher spirits have the power to direct nature? Answer. Certainly, as you will see in the sixth and seventh atmospheric rings. Question. Is your communication a revelation or a philosophy? Answer. Both. Because philosophy is inherent in every revelation. Christianity, as the highest revelation, contains the most beautiful philosophy. Our communications are revelations from a higher spiritual world. Question, if they are revelations, how do you determine whether they are not based on subjective error,